if there's ever a time to be like, I don't know why, that first 6 months is a huge opportunity. And to your point, a lot of people blow it out of being insecure and not deploying humility as a weapon.
Attention is the number one asset.
One question, an amazing lineup of CEOs, founders, and experts. This is Marketing for the Now.
Welcome, everybody. Happy World Kindness Day. It's a special Monday for all of us. Really fired up to have a conversation today. We're going to be focusing on how to unlock the growth mindset. And we've got a tremendous crew here. We're going to be kicking things off with the CMO of the WNBA, Phil Cook. And I think Gary's going to be joining us in just 1 second. I can feel it. Oh, there he is.
Hi.
I was just mentioning to everybody, it's World Kindness Day. Happy World Kindness Day.
Happy World Kindness Day.
Happy Monday. All right, we're going to jump right on in talking about unlocking a growth mindset. And guess who we have first?
Who?
Phil Cook, the CMO of the WNBA. We were just talking that he has been at the WNBA for a while, where he's driving fan growth and brand and strategic partnerships, but 27 years at Nike before that. Incredible. I'm going to leave it to you, too, to kick it off.
Thank you. Thanks, man. How are you? It's great to see you, brother. It's been a little bit.
Hey, how are you, man?
Good, man. First of all, congrats. You know, I know we had a one-on-one meeting not too long ago, and it's just been so exciting to see the momentum of the league and the brand. And I think for everybody who's watching here, and definitely the hundreds of thousands of business and marketing and pop culture leaders that listen to the podcast over the next several weeks and months, I think we can all agree that from a net gut feel, common sense standpoint, there's been a lot of good going on in the WNBA, and that makes me really happy for you and them.
Yeah, you and me both, Gary. I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head when you said momentum. It is certainly in our favor right now. We are, you know, another successful, you know, season under our belt, and growth everywhere, which we're very excited about, with lots of potential still to untap.
So talk to me about this. You know, I think that one thing that really took me aback, and I really enjoyed our meeting over a year ago, whatever it was now, I sensed the growth mindset. You know, I think a lot of times CMOs talk growth, but they're actually on defense. What do you, for everybody who's listening, what does it require politically in a corporate environment, mentally for yourself, work-life balance with a family, strategy, how do you keep up on it? Like, there's so many places you can take this, Phil. I'm curious where you will take it. How do you define unlocking a growth mindset?
You know, we're fortunate that we have such a great platform from which, you know, to pull growth from, right? We have 144 of the greatest athletes in the world, and their influence stretches beyond the court. It stretches certainly into culture and into purpose. And when you have that canvas from which you can, you know, you can craft stories, and you give your team the ability to unlock those stories and find new and creative ways to, you know, inspire and engage fans, it's, you know, the limits are endless. And that's what we've done. We've really started to, again, lead with our athlete stories, make compelling content, a lot of it, learn from that, keep creating. And, you know, it's typical flywheel. It's working, and the engagement, and our partners are finding the same formula. And when they do it, it's unstoppable.
Where do you think the opportunities of distributing your stories are for growth mindset marketers? Like, where do we need to be? Like, at the end of the day, it's all storytelling.
Yeah.
100%. Where do people fall in love with their stars? You know, obviously that landscape changes every decade, every half century. What's, you know, for the growth mindset individuals out here who are operating organizations, whether they're an entrepreneur with 5 employees trying to sell flowers, or whether they're a big organization, what's your hot take on the growth mindset, what the storytelling platforms that really can capture the execution and actually create growth?
You know, we're getting sharper at who we want to share our stories with, right? We've always had a very loyal fan base, and we can keep engaging them. And that's that's kind of the foundation for, you know, the W at age 27. I think the opportunity in front of us is to find those fans of sport and of competition and of culture and find new areas from which to share our stories and new platforms. And look, we want to get younger. We want to get more diverse. We want to do what so many other brands do, obviously. And we know that women's basketball, let's just use that as a sharp point, can certainly reach beyond the confines of fans of women's basketball. And I'll give you an example. Last year, it was Final Four, right? The stories leading up to the Final Four championship last year were incredible. And their audience went from 5 million to 10 million. And those, that 5 million.
You know what's funny, Phil? You know what's funny about that? Those two stars, it did feel a little bit like Magic Bird.
100%.
Right? Like, 100%.
That's our reference point.
Right? Like that 1980, I guess, is what it is.
Yeah.
Final Four, which then dovetailed into them going into the NBA, and long before Michael Jordan came along, the 1982 NBA Finals was not live in America. It was on tape delay. You know how insane that is? CBS chose to show golf instead of the NBA Finals in 1982. That's where the NBA was. And then, so you need these people that transcend and create growth. And obviously those two did last year. And you've got the same thing happening in the pro game, your game. It's unbelievably exciting. In general, women's sports, I think, is potentially a combo with, you know, soccer, proper football, and with what's going on in WNBA. Final thoughts on the watchouts. There's a lot of CMOs and CEOs listening, especially over the next month or two as this fully gets consumed, not just live today. What's the cliche corporate bull crap that stops growth?
Your willingness to accept risk. You know, I think to truly unlock growth, you've got to be willing to fail. And I know that is a little cliche, but it's true. Like you don't know what's really going to make that incremental impact until you try some things, and you've got to be willing to, some of those things don't hit. And we're getting to a point now where that's part of our offense. Get out there, fail fast, and go. And again, it is a little cliche. I'm trying not to be, but we have to be confident in the fact that it's okay to take some big swings. Because if you don't take big swings when you have momentum, it's too late when you're falling off the ledge, right? So this
people,
is the time.
Phil, for the people that are naive to corporate, is it just like people get fired and they don't want to lose their big jobs? Like, is that what like the big, I mean, you're a senior exec. Is that like what you sense about you and your contemporaries or the way you grew up? The people that hold your spot now that you looked up to and wanted to be one day, is it really as simple as that? Like you take a big swing, it's a PR miss, and you become the casualty, and like that is the fear that stops people from doing smart contemporary stuff?
I think all of that, I honestly don't think it leads to firing. I think it leads to a personal like, shit, I just took one, but you get over it and you learn from it. And I think that's what I'm trying to encourage my team to do. Take the risk. It's okay if it doesn't fail. You won't get fired if it doesn't work.
Yeah, I think that's great. It's rare. It's rare. Phil, thank you so much, brother. Congrats on everything at WNBA. We're proud of you.
In touch. See you, Gary.
Love to.
Thanks, Phil. Gary, we're going to bring up Casey O'Reilly next. She's the CMO at Stuart Weitzman. And she's a courageous one. She's has 3 months under her belt at Stuart Weitzman. And I love that she's driving brand heat. In addition to e-commerce and all everything else that has, and she's in the busy period for the holidays, but she came from Procter & Gamble and had a 19-year career there at SK2 in Olay and lived all over the world. So we'll hand it her over to you.
Hello.
Hey, Pace, how are you?
Good. Good to see you, Gary.
Great to see you. Congrats on the gig, and we'll get into it in 1 second, but I just want to give a shout out to everybody watching. Victor Ramirez on LinkedIn, Jonathan Peirce, good to see you on LinkedIn as well. Martin Kratz on YouTube, like the brand heat comment. Super Simple Marketing, good to see you as well. Really, appreciate everybody who's on. We're seeing your comments. Please keep adding to it. Case, obviously you're in this new role, an iconic brand, especially known for an iconic item, the boot, has all its strengths and weaknesses that come along with it. You have this incredible run. I'm going to give you some flowers. When Andre said 19 years, I'm like, did Casey start when she was 7? Kudos to you. that P&G skincare routine clearly worked. You know, obviously a long run in an iconic institution like P&G. Here's a good question. Unlocking growth mindset when you're the new kid. This is something that can really help a lot of people because a lot of people are going through transition. How do you walk lightly? Because you probably don't want to come in too hot.
Yeah.
But I'm sure you have your own passion and point of views, especially with fresh eyes of like, man, we're not doing this and that. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, no, I was thinking about that, this whole unlocking growth mindset for myself. Like, how did I go through that? How did I grow within that path? And really, I'm a parent of two kids, middle school and grade 5. And you just really hear them do a lot of self-negative talk in their heads. Like, I don't know this, or I'm not good at this. And as a parent, I really wanted to learn how to help them. And I know it's out there, but really this power of I don't know yet, that word of yet is something like really, really powerful. And the more that I exercise it with my kids, the more I also accept I actually can do that as well in my work. Yeah. Like, I am the new kid. And you've been all in those meetings also where everybody seems to be like smarter than you and like all higher up. But and you're almost scared of saying that when somebody asks you and you don't know, you're scared of saying, I don't know. But actually, it is okay. What matters?
Especially in those first 100 days.
Exactly.
If there's ever a time to be like, I don't know. Why? I don't know. That first 6 months is a huge opportunity. And to your point, a lot of people blow it out of being insecure and not deploying humility as a weapon.
Exactly. Or saying already something that you know, as if you know the answers to what's there. But saying
and nothing turns off a team that's been in the trenches for a while than someone who's coming out of left field and acting as if they already know.
Everything. Exactly. So it's okay to say, I don't know. But what you say next, which is that yet, and also what you do afterward is what matters the most and what will set you apart. When you follow through and actually go back, you know, I said I didn't know, but I went out there and figured it out, and this is what we're going to try. So the things that you do afterwards is what's going to, like, you know, make you think that it's okay to say I don't know. So that's this period is really all about that acceleration of learning, listening, but at the same time, a little bit more biased towards action. It's super important that in this first like 90 days, you put stuff out there so that you quickly get to that flywheel of learning, that failure that you guys were talking about just now. But yeah, that's how it's been. Right? It's been really exciting and fun.
Do you believe that you can unlock growth more in the honeymoon phase, or because again, this is so great to have you on the show, because so many, you know, the nature of our industry, people do end up in a lot of different places. So a lot, and this time of year, so I'm excited knowing a lot of people will listen to this over the holidays and getting into January and may impact them. Do you believe that when you get a big gig, top of the food chain in marketing or anything else for that matter, that you're better off attacking the growth in the honeymoon phase of the first 6 months to a year? Or do you think the strategy is to tread lightly and try to do the action in year two? That's a really fun question. I'm curious where you're gonna go.
Yeah, no, I mentioned it a little bit earlier, but really as a leader, I think there is that imperative to have a bias for action. That's probably what impedes a lot of growth, but there's so much analysis and, you know, talking versus like starting to create, put stuff out there so that you could just really learn faster and just never stop incrementally improving things. So that's, I guess, what I would say, that the doing something now would be better than doing something like a year later.
Let's talk about growth mindset. In, you know, obviously going through the Procter machine, a lot of marketing talent, a lot of legendary talent there when you got there as a kid. Which mentor most showed you what growth really looked like? And maybe let's give, you know, I think people don't give enough flowers. So let's make someone's day here. Hopefully someone will forward them this video. Which mentor, call, if you feel comfortable, call them out by name and tell us a story where you said, okay, I don't need to be robotic about this. This is not academia. Sure, he did this. I learned. Any story pop to mind when I go there, Case?
Yeah. Probably know who he is. Like Sandeep is my mentor. He's the current CMO from Coach. And I really remember one project, and actually specifically one day that we were working on something together, which was actually something that is a first in the world, like this smart store in Tokyo, like something that combined AI, facial recognition, all of the analysis that you could do for your skin. And it was doing things that have not been done before. And the day before we were supposed to open, nothing worked. Yeah. And I was the lead for that project. And I was like dying. I was like, I can't like just fathom how to figure this out. And the entire team was really so sad and down. And we were ultimately, of course, afraid, like, what will our boss say? Like, Sandeep was the big boss then. But amongst everyone, he was the most positive at that moment that mattered. You really felt that he's got your back and that it is okay that we could figure this out. It's the next day. It's not about this is the biggest thing ever, but hey, we're opening a learning lab. You guys help figure this out. Some things are working. What's your input? Like, so it kind of like switched a little bit in that sense. So there are ways out. There are always like solutions. And knowing that your boss, or the people above you has your back and that you could do it, you know, that's the biggest unlock for everyone in the team.
The number one thing that is required of leadership is the elimination of fear.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I know you guys were talking earlier about, is it about being fired? But it's not that. Like, we really do care about what other people think about us. Like, would I be seen as a failure? Or would I be seen like I'm not in my A game? But you just have to, like, believe that everyone's just wanting to do a good job, you know, and that your role is that to help support them and empower them to grow into that goodness that they have.
In the last minute that we have, I'm sure you thought about things we might touch on or you wanted to talk about. Anything we didn't touch on that you'd like to bring to the conversation?
I know, I would just really go back to that thing about, as a manager, as a leader now, it's important to have your team's back. It's important to role model that curiosity, even at this level, okay to say you don't know, learn it with the team. And, it's really wonderful to think about always having that yet as a word out of all your creativity.
Okay, so we're rooting for you. I know we're in the same building.
I'll see you.
Hopefully see you in the elevator. Stop by. It's always good to see you. Good luck.
Good luck. Thank you.
Thanks, Casey. All right, Gary, we've got another good one coming up. We've got our friend Drika, who's coming in live from Portland, the CMO of Vans. She too is, it's kind of early on in your tenure there. Is that right, Drika?
Yeah.
We've got another Nike vet. We were just having a little reunion in the green room beforehand. It sounded like there was like a little bit of an overlap with Phil, almost 20 years. And she also did her fair share of globetrotting and was at Timberland as well. So can't wait to hear a little bit more about how you unlock your growth mindset.
Hey, Drika, how are you?
Hi, Gary. First and foremost, most important thing I need to say to you, happy birthday for tomorrow, Gary.
Yes, thank you very much. Tomorrow, the big 4-8.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So what are you going to do?
Not much. I'm actually very weird. You know, people find this very funny. I'm very weird about my birthday. I'm so out there. And I don't think people realize this about me, but like, this is going to make people laugh. I don't like being the center of attention when I don't think I did anything that merits being the center of attention. Okay. And so I've had this very weird relationship with my birthday because I'm like, well, you know, it's almost like I really just want to spend time with my parents because I feel like it was their moment, you know, like in some weird way. So anyway, very small family stuff, looking forward to it. I don't want to take up too much time on my birthday, especially because I'm a big fan of yours in the conversations we've had over the last 3 years. I actually genuinely believe, you know, when we had this, I was like, I really hope we can get her on the show for this one. I think you ooze growth mindset. You know, we haven't had the luxury of really working together under the hood, but our conversations during COVID and as we've gotten to know each other, I really think it's in you. I think the word choices you use, the way you talk about it. So, you know, it's as big of a cosign as give. You're on this incredible brand now. I mean, Vans is like, I'm sure everyone in the comments like, give me some Vans. I love Vans. It's such an iconic brand. You know, I think Vans went from being a Cali thing. It's got so much juice now in urban culture. I'm actually curious myself, when you think about growing or the growth mindset for Vans now, like where can it go? What do you have to look for? Because it's almost like we're on the third bite of the apple with Vans, right? It was very surfer skateboarder, dude. Now it's like crossed over into pop urban culture, like cool kids in the hood rock Vans, not just Jordans. I'm actually curious, where do you go next?
Yeah. Well, I think a great question. I think a couple of things. One is to go back on the, because I'm as you, I'm obsessed with the growth question. And I think, especially for people in our industry, it all starts with the belief, right? That brand elevation is leading to brand growth, is leading to revenue growth. And you really need to believe in that. And I truly, truly believe in that. And then at the center of the brand elevation process, because there's a recipe, right? Is knowing who you are, one, knowing who your consumers are, but also when in that dynamic, knowing where you are and how you need to evolve to make sure that you're also part of the mindset of the future generation. And it's really that tension with, are you making the best decisions for what your brand stands for? Therefore, you need to know what it is in relationship to the consumer. Do you know everything about the consumer and the culture that surrounds the consumer in relationship to the marketplace that they are or you are dealing with? And that can be global or local. It can be a neighborhood, right? And I think that's really the recipe for us as marketeers, but also as business leaders, to secure the future of your brand and the relevancy, but also the targets, the financial targets that come with it.
What do you think, what are the cliche roadblocks from actually going on? I mean, listen, growth mindset means offense versus defense. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, from your perspective and knowing a little bit about your career, you get into a big company like a Nike. Some of the brands you're working on now have more nimble budgets and realities. You know, the preciousness of the swoosh is almost impossible to touch, right? It gets very hard. What do you think are the roadblocks? You know, again, this program is so consumed by the majority of Fortune 500 marketers and things of that nature. What is a watch out now that you've been through the game? Or even more interestingly, give me a cliche watch out and how to navigate through it.
I think watch out for all of us. It doesn't matter if your brand is big or your brand is small. It doesn't matter. The watch out, and I see it all the time. I see it all the time, is disconnecting from your consumers is a big watch out. Stopping when people stop to have the obsession to know everything about their consumers. And it's that combination of art and science, especially in this time of where we are, right? Data are incredibly important, but you need to have the insights that come with intuition. Intuition is based on experience. Experience is based on repetition to contextualize this data. And then again, over and over again, it doesn't matter if you're big and small. When brands evolve, globally iconic, locally adopted, personally loved brands, and they have to, they can never forget where they come from. So it's really that tension as well that is quintessential. And if you look to Vans, right? First of all, as you said, we are the leading skateboarding brand. We're anchored in skateboarding. It's our tagline, off the wall, right? Now, how do you then dimensionalize your authenticity and that vision of who you are towards different kind of audiences? And dare I say, the audiences that are creating the future, not only the ones that took you all the way to where you are today.
Who was the first person you came across in your career that really showed you like, oh, it's possible to do offense work and actually be consumer? What you're saying is, and which is probably why I align so much with you, I just think that almost everyone is boardroom centric and not actual consumer centric. We sit in fancy meetings talking bullshit that none of our customers care about. And it's challenging because you want to uphold brand. But the problem is you need so much creative that's relevant to so many different consumer bases that people that want to uphold brand academically get stuck because they think like they are so literal around brand interpretation. So if you stand for optimism, however they see optimism, they want to see it every video and picture. But like for me, I think losing is an optimistic framework. I think being able to lose makes me optimistic about you. But I can imagine me showing a video to somebody who says our brand stands for optimism, and I show you a little league baseball game and a 9-year-old loses and strikes out and starts crying, that you're gonna see something. You're gonna be like, what the hell are you talking about, Gary? And I'm gonna say, no, you don't understand. This is the moment this 9-year-old became strong and resilient, which is the ultimate optimism. That's challenging. How do we get around relevance in the face of people being literal in a boardroom and not consumer centric?
Oh my God, that's for your birthday for a couple of bottles of wine. I can go around on this. Again, the word common sense. The word common sense, right? I see it over and over. You look at data, right? And you're not able to contextualize data. There's a difference between the what and the how. In order to have the how to contextualize, you need to have experience in the fieldwork. And you truly, truly need to be passionate about your consumers and about your brand. Because if you connect those two in front of the opportunity, you're going to create new space. You're going to create things that don't exist yet, right? And new space, we believe, and I'm sure because we come from that school, and again, one name I definitely want to drop in my career, there's a couple of them, Trevor Edwards, for sure, taught us, and again, it's Nike culture as well, but also today, someone like a Sandy Bodegger, they were as much in the field and they were looking at data. And it's really that combination that allows you then to say, let's go to new spaces. When you create new space, you will create future revenue growth by then pulling it into the company and scale it, right? And we all wholeheartedly, coming from the school, we believe in that and we still believe in that today. There's a lot of things that have changed in thousands and thousands of years of humanity. There's things that haven't changed, right? The fact that you need to create new opportunities, because that's also what innovative thinking is about, to then say, how are we going to capitalize on it and build a new products of the future, concepts of the future, right? And I truly, truly believe in that as a growth driver and as a brand innovator.
It's great to see you again. Have the best week.
Bye.
Thank you, Trika.
All right, go run. See ya.
All right, see ya.